I'm reading from a book, Demon Possession, Nevius. The introduction by none other than Merrill F. Unger. Now, Merrill F. Unger has written probably the modern textbook on demonology for the Baptist, at least. And I'm trying to demonstrate that you don't have to be a nut to be aware that these things go on. You just have to be aware. Now, before I get into the demonologist again, of course, if you don't want me to, I won't. I'm going to read from this main line, mainstream evangelical Christian missionary book about demon possession. After being delivered, a Mr. Quo was accompanying the missionary as his guide. Now you say, who's Mr. Quo? We're going to get acquainted. After the services the next day, now Mr. Quo has been delivered from demon possession, which was Sunday. I requested Mr. Quo to accompany me to the next preaching place. Now, this doesn't read quite as dramatic as some of the others that I have. It's just matter of fact. It's written by a missionary. I requested Mr. Quo to accompany me to the next preaching place and then drew from him a fuller history of his experiences from the time when he first came under the control of the evil spirit. I afterward had long conversations with his wife and also conversed on the same subject at length with his father. This is a very dry discussion of demon possession. He gives all the evidences in their work in China and other Christian countries. Then he discusses all the theories of demonology, evolution and other theories, the pathological theory, the psychological theory, and then the teachings of sacred scriptures on it, then the stages of demon possession. I mean, this has been around a long, long time. This mainline, evangelical, Baptist textbook. I afterward had long conversations with his wife and also conversed on the same subject at length with his father. All the different accounts supplement and confirm his own and agree in every important particular. I give these statements as I receive them. Of course, Mr. Quo's statements respecting what he said and did when in a state of unconsciousness depend upon the testimony of those about him. That's obvious. The story in his own words is as follows. Near the close of the year before last, 1877, I bought a number of pictures, including one of Wang Mu Niang. Now, I don't vouch for my Chinese. The wife of Yu Huang, the chief divinity of China. I bought a number of pictures, including one of Wang Mu Niang, the wife of Yu Huang, the chief divinity of China. For the goddess Wang Mu Niang, I selected the most honorable position in the house. The others I pasted on the walls here and there as ornaments. On the second day of the first month, I proposed worshiping the goddess, but my wife objected. The next night, a spirit came, apparently in a dream, and said to me, I am Wang Mu Niang of Yun Min San, the name of a neighboring mountain. I have taken up my abode in your house. It said this repeatedly. I had awakened and was conscious of the presence now of the Spirit. I knew it was a Shi-Qui, or Shi-Qui, however it's pronounced, their word for evil spirit. And as such, I resisted it and cursed it, saying, I will have nothing to do with you. This my wife heard and begged to know what it meant. And I told her. After this, all was quiet, and I was not disturbed for some days. About a week afterward, a feeling of uneasiness and restlessness came over me, which I could not control. At night, I went to bed as usual, but grew more and more restless. At last, seized by an irresistible impulse, I rose from my bed and went straight to a gambler's den in Kaukia, where I lost at once $16,000 cash. $16, a large sum for a peasant Chinaman. $16,000, whatever their form of exchange was then. I started for home and lost my way. But when it grew light, I got back to my house. At that time, I was conscious of what I was doing and saying, but I did things mechanically and soon forgot what I'd said. I did not care to eat, and only did so when urged to. After some days, a gambler from Kalkia came and asked me to go with him, which I did. This time I lost 25,000 cash, about 20 bucks, a lot for a poor Chinaman. On the 15th and 16th of the first month, I went to Pita, where there was a theater. The same night, I again lost 13,000 cash in gambling. The next morning, I returned home, and just as I was entering my village, I fell down frothing at the mouth and unconscious, and was carried to my house. Medicine was given me, which partially restored me to consciousness. The next day, I dressed myself and attempted to run away from home, but I soon found myself staggering. Everything grew dark, and I rushed back to my room. I soon became violent, attacking all who ventured near. My father, hearing the state of things, came from his home to see me. As he entered, I seized a fowling piece, which I had secreted under my bed, and fired it at him. That's a shotgun. Fortunately, the charge went over his head into the ceiling. With the help of the neighbors, my father bound me with chains and took me to his home in Chengyu. A doctor who was called, after giving me large doses of medicine without effect, left, refusing to have anything more to do with me. For 5 or 6 days, I raved wildly, and my friends were in great distress. They proposed giving me more medicine, but the demon, speaking through me, replied, "Any amount of medicine will be of no use." My mother then asked, "If medicine is of no use, what should we do?" The demon replied, "Burn incense to me and submit yourself to me, and all will be well." My parents promised to do this and knelt down and worshipped the demon, begging it to torment me no longer. Now, most people grow up in church, have no trouble believing that Satan asked Jesus to do the same thing. In the temptation in the wilderness, bow down, worship me, and give him every kingdom. And not once did Jesus challenge the fact that he could give him those kingdoms. They were Satan's to give. Begging it, my parents promised to do this, knelt down, worship the demon, begging it to torment me no longer. Thus, the matter was arranged, I all the time remaining in a state of unconsciousness. About midnight, I attempted to leave the house. The attendants followed me, brought me back, and bound me again. Then my parents a second time worshipped the demon, begging it to relieve me from my sufferings and renewing their promise that I myself should hereafter worship and serve it. I then recovered consciousness. My mother told me all that had happened and of the promise they had made for me. On my refusing consent to this, I again lost all consciousness. My mother besought the favor of the demon, renewing her promise to insist upon my obedience. And I again recovered consciousness. In their great distress, my father and mother implored me to fulfill their promise and worship the evil spirit. And at last, I reluctantly consented. The demon had directed that we should call a certain woman in Cao Chau, who was a spirit medium, to give us directions in putting in order our place of worship. So all was arranged. And on the 1st and 15th of each month, we burnt incense, offered food, and made the required prostrations before the shrine on which the picture of the goddess was placed. The spirit came at intervals, sometimes every few days, sometimes after a period of a month or more. At these times, I felt a fluttering of the heart and a sense of fear and inability to control myself, and was obliged to sit or lie down. I would tell my wife when these symptoms came on, she'd run for a neighboring woman less timid than herself, and they too burned incense to the demon in my stead and received its directions, which they afterward communicated to me, for though spoken by my lips, I had been entirely unconscious of them. The demon often bade us Well, now, you're all bored with this subject, of that I'm very sure. You don't want me to do anything with it at all. That's what I said. Now, this is the Chinese. Now, these are the demons that speak Chinese. He's here. I have been simply pointing out that this is not a subject limited to the far-out fanatical fringe of Christianity. It's just a subject that, because certain fanatical fringes have overdone it, Satan has accomplished the purpose of turning off a lot of people, allowing him to work in secret. The book on biblical demonology by Merle Unger, who wrote the introduction to the book I was reading in earlier of demon possession among the missionaries in China, Merle Unger is Mr. Establishment in the Baptist Church on the opposite the cover sheet. He chose to put 2 Corinthians 2:11. That no advantage may be gained over us by Satan, we are not ignorant of his devices. Knowledge drives fear away. And nothing is as attractive to Satan as an atmosphere of fear. I'm reading from The Demonologist. You remember that? I gave away The Devil in Connecticut this morning. Also by Gerald Brittle, also involving the Warrens. And someone called in and said, all due respect for the Warrens, they don't seem to do much in the way of exorcism. They're Catholics. They abide by Catholic doctrine. And Catholic doctrine requires that permission be sought from the church, and the church appoint the exorcist when it's someone else's house. If you'll remember, if you were listening when I started on this subject, while the Warrens were working on the Amityville horror case, from which a movie was made, and a bad movie at that, they were attacked in their own home. And there, Ed Warren quite effectively exercised the situation in his own home. But they are lay people, and they abide by the regulations of the Catholic Church, which requires that permission be sought and an exorcist be assigned. They then come in as experts, helping to set the stage for this and helping to speed up the process of gathering the data that the Church requires, the Catholic Church, before they grant permission for an exorcism. Now, I was reading about a home, the Hillman family. They were getting ready to go to Britain. They received a distress call from the Hillman family. Their three children, D-15, Bob 14, Melanie 11, it had a strange experience. When they arrived, they began to question the household. Mr. and Mrs. Hillman made it clear they had not experienced any of the phenomena the children talked about. "But I would imagine," Mrs. Hillman said, "that this is probably my fault, at least from what little I know about the subject. Dee has always been interested in the occult, witchcraft, spells, that sort of thing. She has a small library, but none of the books were on conjuring. That's bringing them up. So last Christmas, I bought her one on conjuring demons as a present." You realize the mileage that Satan gets out of skepticism? You can't get much, if anything, from God without faith. In fact, the Bible clearly says, without faith it's impossible to please God. Skepticism serves the devil. People do stupid things like this because they think, oh, there's nothing to it. "So last Christmas I bought her a book on conjuring demons as a present. I honestly didn't think anything like this was going to happen," she said. "Okay," Ed said, turning to Dee, "where is this book?" "Upstairs," the girl answered. "It's paperback. It explains how to conjure something like 75 different demons. It tells the correct ritual." Now, I'm reading these ghost stories because I think it's time somebody give an intelligent approach to the subject of demonology. You can't read through the opening chapters of the Gospels in the New Testament without Jesus confronting demons, from a demon in the synagogue to the shore of Galilee. You can't even enjoy the experience on the Mount of Transfiguration without coming down immediately to confront the demoniac boy that was so possessed that his disciples were unable to deliver him. You can't go through the Old Testament without confronting the power of evil spirits to be called in the Gospel of Matthew the prince of the power of the air. You can't even go into the Garden of Eden without Satan coming there to mess it up. It is indigenously, inseparably a part of the Hebrew Christian faith, and yet there's got to be more ignorance on the subject than about any other religious subject. This pastor, I spent 18 years traveling as a teacher on mission fields. You know about it there, and I was just demonstrating with this pipe out of the way that I used to scare you. You say, "Well, I can't believe anybody could go to heaven and smoke a pipe." Well, probably the trip will be so fast that the rapture will put it out, but I don't really think that that's going to make or break me on the things of God. Sure was a nice opening, though. I'm just sorry I had to ruin it by explaining it to new people. All the people who listen to me know that that's the cue for wrap yourself tight with blankets and turn up the lights and build a big fire and get a dog that can growl and sit down. It's going to be a ghost story. I was reading from this center stage evangelical Christianity, Demon Possession by Nevius. The introduction is by Merrill Unger, Dallas Theological Seminary. I mean, he's Mr. Establishment, or part of that group. And he writes the introduction to it. And these missionaries describe demon possession experiences like those we've been reading by the Catholic demonologist. We were in the middle of reading the Pentecostal in Manila, dealing with the girl in Bilibid prison. Now, I started on the subject, and you know why. There's a mysterious passage in Genesis 6 about the sons of God mating with the women on this earth, and the Bible means exactly that. It wasn't the descendants of Seth mating with the daughters of Cain. There's nothing in that union that requires that Nephilim be produced, which the Septuagint calls giants. It wasn't the rulers mating with the common people. It's exactly what it says it was. The apocryphal book of Enoch says they're watchers. And the book of Jude speaks of angels that kept not their first estate, and the punishment that was given to them. Now, there are some people that believe their offspring, deprived of body in the flood, become demon spirits looking for bodies to inhabit. There are many theories on this subject. I was teaching and got on this as background for teaching verse by verse through the book of Genesis. When I got down to it, I started reading from the book by Gerald Brittle, the demonologist. The story's unbelievable. That's why I want my sheepskin here tonight, so I can wave and say, hey, I'm not crazy. I don't believe this either. But it's true. These are the most famous lay demonologists probably in America. I just gave away the book, The Devil in Connecticut. They were called in for the Amityville horror case. They were called in by the commandant at West Point to deal with a spirit problem. They lecture on the Queen Elizabeth, when it was flying back and forth. The story I'm reading was in the middle of the book, The Demonologist by Gerald Brittle, a family named the Hillmans. Three kids, D-15, Bob-14, Melanie-11. Mrs. Hillman says, we didn't see the phenomena when they call in these Ghostbusters. That's a song I want Ron to learn. Ghostbusters. We didn't see anything, Mrs. Hillman said, when the demonologists Ed and Lorraine has clairvoyant ability. But I think I'm probably to blame, Mrs. Hillman said, because Dee has always been interested in the occult, witchcraft, spells, that sort of thing. She has a small library, but none of the books were on conjuring. So last Christmas, I bought her one on conjuring. I honestly didn't think this was going to happen when I gave her the present of the book telling her how to conjure up demons. Okay, Ed said, turning to Dee, where is this book? Upstairs, the girl answered. It's a paperback. It explains how to conjure something like 75 different demons. It tells the correct ritual and explains the debt you pay if the ritual works. How can I keep going on this subject in a new city? I mean, I've been 10 years in Los Angeles and San Francisco and New England. But I like Ohio. Ohio's a wonderful state. This is going to turn them off on me, first cat out of the bag. But they're pretty smart, though, up in Ohio. They'll figure it out, I think. I'm going to do it. Don't go away too quickly. I may get to what you like if you stick around. It's paperback. It explains how to conjure something like 75 different demons. Tells the correct ritual and explains the debt you pay if the ritual works. Did you perform any of the rituals? Yes. What demons did you try to conjure? Which ones? She repeated. I don't know. I only did a few of the easy rituals, the ones I could understand and had the equipment for. When I did them, though, nothing happened, so I didn't bother anymore. Sometimes the response will come days, weeks, months, even years later, Ed informed her. Tell me about what happened to you this week. You had trouble, I believe. Twice, said Dee. Who was here when it happened? Well, just Bob, Melanie, and me. And then she begins to tell a story, taking a shower, going upstairs, and hearing, and she turned the radio and the lights out. And she hears the radio on. She yells at her brother, Bob, did you turn it on? No, he didn't turn it on. They all gather in Bob's room, and they hear the radio on, and they hear sounds like furniture being thrown around downstairs. Then she went downstairs and turned the lights and the radio off a second time. When she got up there, the water in the bathroom was running again. This got me mad, she says, because she's sure her brother was doing it. But when she came out, the radio was on real loud and all the lights were on downstairs. She just turned them off. She yelled at Bob, her brother, says, there's someone in the house. Ed, quizzing him, says, Bob, did you hear the radio? Yeah, I did. But I didn't think he bothered the answer. Did you turn on the water? No way, the boy said. Okay, D, Ed said, carry on. From upstairs, D says, I could hear the radio changing stations, so I went right back down again, thinking my parents might be home. Now, I don't believe any of this, but it's true. Now, most of you, a few weeks ago, would have laughed kind of embarrassedly, not sure whether you should take your pastor seriously or not, when I started reading this stuff. But as we have finished reading the mysteries of the Bermuda Triangle and the devil in Connecticut, what portions we've read, and the Donovan House, and the happenings to Ed and Lorraine Warren when they were investigating the Amityville case, and the scenario in the Bilibid prison in Manila, there's starting to be a certain common pattern, isn't there? Now let's read on. I went right back down again thinking my parents might be doing this. When I got down there this time, the radio dial was moving back and forth all by itself. I stood there and watched it. And that's when I started to get scared. I turned off the radio and the lights again. But when I got halfway up the stairs, I felt an icy, cold hand touch me on the shoulder. Just for a second, in the dark. I want you to know, if that hand had touched me, it would have only been for a second. I mean, regardless of the intentions of that hand, it would only have been for a second. There would have been an airborne Scott and a hole in the ceiling. I felt an icy cold hand touch me on the shoulder just for a second in the dark. I almost screamed. What is this almost bit? I almost screamed, but I didn't. I just went right to my bedroom, shut the door, and turned off the light. Before I got to my bed, though, I heard the sound of footsteps, like someone was walking out of my room into the hall, but the door never opened. When are we going off in Steubenville? My Lord God of mercy, we're on. We're on for 4 hours and a half. I got them all night. Ha! I mean, I've got them all night. Just stick around. It ain't going to be any... I'll put you to bed happy before I'm finished. So just hang on. I almost screamed, but I didn't. I just went right to my bedroom, shut the door, and turned off the light. Before I got to my bed, though, I heard the sound of footsteps, like someone was walking out of my room into the hall, but the door never opened. Now, can I say in my defense, will you all bear witness that I read the other night the much suppressed for 75 years story of the poltergeist in John Wesley's home?
Yes, sir.
Now, some of you people that keep up on all the branches of theology know that the New Orthodox theologians, the giant among them in ontology and metaphysical study, was Paul Tillich. After Paul Tillich, the great New Orthodox theologian's death, Hannah Tillich, his wife, wrote a brilliant story of her life with Paul Tillich. One of the things that surprised many of those who studied Paul Tillich was the constant harassment that Hannah Tillich records that he faced from demons. I'm telling you, this is not a subject that's limited to fringe territory. to those that want to look, there's just too much evidence to ignore it completely. But let's keep going with this Catholic story. I almost screamed, but I didn't. I just went right to my bedroom, shut the door, and turned off the light. Before I got to my bed, though, I heard the sound of footsteps, like someone was walking out of my room into the hall, but the door never opened. Well, didn't you think any of this was strange? Ed wanted to know. Sure I did, said Dee. I was scared out of my mind. Melanie, did you hear the radio? Ed asked her. No, I was asleep, answered the little girl. Now, Dee, did anything else happen after you heard the footsteps leave the room? Yeah. Plenty. Too hot in here, Mike. After reading these stories, I suppose that's a good sign. That it's hot in here. Yeah, plenty. When I got in bed, I lay down, closed my eyes. Suddenly, I heard a door downstairs slam real hard. After that, I heard furniture being pushed around and crashing, like it was being thrown. Now, I want to tell you folks that they're scared spitless in here. And they're trying to compensate. After that, I heard furniture being pushed around and crashing like it was being thrown by somebody who was very mad. I really thought there was someone in the house, but I was too scared to do anything, so I just kept my eyes closed. But even though my eyes were closed, I could see my whole room through my eyelids. This book's going to destroy my reputation. I just can't believe this. But even though this is true. But it couldn't be. Even though my eyes were closed, I could see my whole room through my eyelids. I opened my eyes, but nothing was different, so I closed my eyes again. Then, through my eyelids. How old is this girl? 15. If she's lying, what I'd do to her hind parts if she were my daughter is beyond belief. I mean, nobody could lie this good. Even though my eyes were closed, I could see my whole room through my eyelids. Opened my eyes, but nothing was different, so I closed my eyes again. Then, through my eyelids, I saw a silver light come out of the woods and glide into my bedroom. It was there when I opened my eyes, too. Next thing I knew, some hand yanked my hair 3 times. Through my eyelids, I saw a silver light come out of the woods and glide into my bedroom. It was there when I opened my eyes, too. Next thing I knew, some hand yanked my hair 3 times. Each time it pulled harder until the 3rd time it made my eyes water. Then I screamed. I mean, this gal's got slow reactions. That's why I know it couldn't be a lie. Nobody that could think up a lie like this would be dumb enough to try to make me believe to wait till the 3rd yank to scream. She's just trapped by truth. Then I screamed and ran into Bobby's room. Bob asked Ed, did you hear all the noise downstairs? Yeah, he replied. Why didn't you do anything? I was too scared, he admitted. Good answer, said Ed. Melanie, did you hear anything? I heard the furniture being thrown around, and when Dee screamed, I went into Bob's room. About what time did all this happen, Ed questioned. That's the funny thing, Dee told him. It was about 10:30 when I got out of the shower, but my bedroom clock was 3 hours ahead. And when I went into Bob's room, his clock was 3 hours behind. All right, once you were in Bob's room, did the noises stop? Everything got even louder, Dee said. Did you hear any other sounds in the house at the time? Pounding on the walls, voices, knocking? No, just doors slamming, footsteps, and furniture being thrown around, Bob said. It's enough. What'd you hear, Melanie? Same thing Bob heard. I heard what sounded to me like loud whisperings, too, said Dee. Could you make anything out, Ed asked her? No. What about the footsteps, Ed went on? Did they lead anywhere? No, they went around in circles, said Bob. Dee nodded agreement. After you all went into Bob's bedroom, you kept on hearing these sounds downstairs, Ed repeated. What'd you do then? We had an argument, Bob answered. Dee wanted to call the police, and I wouldn't let her because I knew there wasn't anybody down there. If the police came, I figured they might think we were playing jokes on them. Finally, we called my parents. By the time they came home, everything had stopped, and all they did was tell us we were hearing things. Because we were tired, they didn't believe us. You said these phenomena happened to you twice, Ed reminded the children. What happened the second time? Second time was last night, Bob replied. Only Dee and I were here. Almost exactly the same thing happened as on Thursday. This time, Dee was in her bedroom, and I'd taken the shower. When I came out of the bathroom, I heard the radio on downstairs. The stations were being changed slowly, and I yelled down, "Leave that one on!" But when I walked down the stairs, no one was there except the dog. He was snarling viciously at something in the room. You're really scared, aren't you? That was really strange, because he couldn't have heard anything. Our dog's deaf. Then I remembered the other night, and I ran upstairs and went to bed. About 5 minutes later, the footsteps started downstairs, making the whole house vibrate, and the furniture started being thrown around again. I was scared the first time, but this time I was really scared. Did that one pretty good, didn't we? Oh, Lord, I just saw something else I haven't finished. I thought I'd finished everything. My search for the ghost of Flight 401 down there in Florida. I forgot I left that one hanging. We just joined San Antonio, Texas. They're used to me by now. They don't even know what's going on. Now, that was designed to scare you. I'm reading from The Demonologist by Gerald Brittle, The Extraordinary Career of Ed and Lorraine Warren, the Catholic Demonologist. Now, folks in Texas, you've been listening to me. You can catch on quickly. I mean, you know, if you want to hear it without something being left out, buy a dish and watch me 24 hours a day. I'm reading about the strange goings-on at the Hillman household. The Hillman house has three kids in it, Dee, Bob, and Melanie. Dee's 15, and they go down from there. Dee was into the occult, but she didn't have a book on how to conjure demons, so her mother did her a favor. Bought her a paperback book as a Christmas present on how to conjure up demons. It told them how to conjure up 75 different demons. She only practiced with the simple ones. She thought nothing had happened until one night they went upstairs and they heard somebody playing with a radio dial downstairs, turned it on. When she had turned it off, turning the lights on, turning water on, sounded like they were throwing furniture around, scared the living daylights out of them. Then, as she was hiding in bed, a big glow came into her room and she felt a hand jerk her hair three times. Scared the kids spitless. They called their parents. When they came home, parents say, "Oh, you're hearing things." I thought I reviewed that rather fast. You said these phenomena happened to you twice, Ed reminded the children as the demonologist is interviewing them. What happened the second time? Second time was last night, Bob replied. Only D and I were there. Almost exactly the same thing happened as on Thursday. This time D was in her bedroom and I'd taken the shower. When I came out of the bathroom, I heard the radio on downstairs. The stations were being changed slowly. And I yelled down, "Leave that one on." But when I was walking down the stairs, no one was there except the dog. He was snarling viciously at something in the room. Now, that was really strange, because he couldn't have heard anything, our dog's deaf. Then I remembered the other night, and I ran upstairs and went to bed. About 5 minutes later, the footsteps started downstairs, making the whole house vibrate. And the furniture started being thrown around again. I was scared the first time, but this time I was really scared. That's where I was. "Did you hear it, 2D? Asked Ed. "Yeah, just like he did. I even yelled out to Bob, 'Do you hear it?' And he hollered at me saying, 'Shut up!'" "I guess I didn't want to admit it was really happening again," admitted Bob. "When you were in your room, did you see or feel anything unusual?" Ed asked him. "No, nothing," he hollered at me saying, "Shut up!" "I guess I didn't want to admit it was really happening again," admitted Bob. "When you were in your room, did you see or feel anything unusual?" Ed asked him. "No, nothing." "How about you, Dee?" "Well, the more scared I felt, the louder everything became downstairs. The second time, I also saw a dark, purplish cloud in my bedroom. I could never look at it directly. Only out of the corner of my eye. When that purple ball was in my room, I kept my eyes closed so I couldn't see it. As I lay there, my hands were closed up in tight fists. All of a sudden, I felt another hand try to force mine open. It was a really strong hand, like a grown man's. It couldn't get my fist open, so it yanked at my arm and tried to pull me out of bed. It pulled me almost halfway out of bed before I screamed for help. Boy, this is a slow screaming moment. It pulled me almost halfway out of bed before I screamed for help. Shut up. Then it let go. Are you reading this? Then it let. You must be reading something else. Then it let go and. Now, that's a little further than where I was last time. I got a funny call from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, watching on Channel 9 out of Steubenville. It says the congregation seems very normal. We're puzzled here. But does that mean I'm not normal? I mean, how could an abnormal pastor have a normal congregation? I think that's funny. I suppose we got 50 doctors in our congregation. Everywhere from clinical psychologists to chiropractors to dentists to world-famous bone surgeons to specialists in every area. We must have 24 attorneys. We touch every dimension of life, from housewives to hard hats to MDs. To judges. Sure, we're a normal church. I've been a pastor all my life. I just like to get down with you on Sunday night and be at home. Why should I wear a penguin suit and a robe on Sunday night? Now, for those that must know, I did a PhD at Stanford University in philosophies of education. I grew up in the church. I lost my faith as a preacher's son because I saw so much stupidity. I came back to my faith from a hard-headed study of the resurrection. I spent 3.5 years, and I could find no explanation other than he came out of that tomb. And when that happened, I then could make that leap of faith and believe the rest of it. Well, I didn't believe everything, but I could believe the basic claims of Christ. And I'm in love with the truth and in love with the search for truth, and I'm determined to prove that you can build a church and let God save people without me having to do it. I preach God's performance through his word to inspire faith, and God gives salvation to people for their faith. That seems to be the lost message. Christ is formed in your heart by faith. Now, the church evangelically admits that's the way you get saved, not of works, lest any man should boast. But then they make you work to stay saved. My Bible tells me you stay saved the same way you got saved, faithing. And as A.W. Tozier, the Christian Missionary Alliance preacher, used to say, God's not looking for spiritual imitation. He wants spiritual fruition.
This is the end of Side 1. For the rest of the teaching, please turn the tape over for Side 2. Thank you.